The Kathleen Show, shaking things up and grabbing life by the ovaries. Here's your host, mom, wife, writer, movie director, producer, entrepreneur, and overall regular chick, Kathleen Slattery Moscow.
Welcome to the studio. I am here in downright lovely Madison, Wisconsin, and darned glad to be hooking up with you today. This is the program where we rattle some cages and make some changes, where we push back on our lives and our health and say a big hell no to the status quo. And I do need to give a special shout out to our listeners on 107.1 FM in Minneapolis for flooding our inbox with your nice words. And a specific thank you goes to Michelle, Suzanne, and Jimmy L. for your great comments and suggestions. So I want to talk about crappy childhoods today. Not in some way that allows us to victimize ourselves and blame our current lives on our traumatic experiences or our crazy parents, but instead using and embracing those experiences to become our very best and to shine our brightest. There's a whole philosophy of life that says that we grow the most when we face adversity. But that's not always easy to recognize when you're in the thick of it. Many of us had less than ideal childhoods. You may have grown up in poverty or with abuse or divorce or alcohol or drugs. And when all you have seen and felt is negativity, it can be really difficult to break that cycle in your life. I spent a lot of my 20s lamenting what I was not given as a kid and letting it adversely shape my decisions and my confidence level. And then around 30, I realized that focusing on the grief was getting me nowhere except more of the same of what I was trying to run from. But this isn't always conscious, right? It sometimes just subtly becomes part of the story we repeatedly tell ourselves. We use our childhoods as an excuse for where we are or aren't in our life and for everything that is wrong. But now, finally at 40, I look back and I realize I wouldn't change a thing. My crappy childhood made me tougher and more resilient and work harder. It made me appreciative of what I have now and softer towards other people. I was not handed things or happiness on a silver platter, and I'm grateful because it pushed me to become a better person than I might have been. So the next time you want to use what happened to you as a kid as an excuse, turn that thought on its head. Instead, embrace your past, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Use it to inspire you. Use it to know exactly what you do not want to repeat. Use it to have more empathy, or like our next guest, use it as creative material. Coming up is the woman of the century who put her shocking childhood to work for her in her best-selling books, in her poetry, and the way she has embraced and conducted her entire life, the one and only Miss Maya Angelou. You're listening to The Kathleen Show, and during the break, be sure to check us out online at thekathleenshow.com.
It's me, Dave Durbin. I play Katherine Heigl's Snake of a Boss in Kathleen Slattery Moscow's movie Side Effects. But in real life, I'm a nice guy. And you can check me out, and Katherine Heigl, in stores everywhere at the end of March. In the meantime, catch the Side Effects trailer at thekathleenshow.com.
This is Kathleen, and our show is brought to you today by Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin, where you belong. Well, Welcome back to the studio. I'm Kathleen Slattery Moscow, and this is the program where we shake things up and say hell no to the status quo. And my next guest has been shaking things up her entire life and is truly one of the most gorgeous human beings in our midst. And I'm going to try not to get choked up through this whole thing. Maya Angelou is a poet, an award-winning writer, a journalist, an activist, a performer, a dancer, an actress, a director, and a teacher. She is also a three-time Grammy Award winner for her autobiographical spoken word recordings. In 1993, Maya recited her poem called On the Pulse of Morning at President Clinton's inauguration. Since 2006, she has been hosting a weekly radio program on the Oprah and Friends channel. Maya has over 30 literary titles to her name, including her best-selling book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, and most recently, Letter to My Daughter. Maya Angelou, welcome to the program.
Thank you very, very much, Kathleen. I'm delighted to be on the program.
You know, I have something to share with you. When I was first handed your most recent book, Letter to My Daughter, I held the book in my hands and my hands just started to shake and my eyes started to water and I felt like I couldn't breathe. I can't explain it. I just sat there holding it and touching it and turning it over in my hands. And I think I was both excited but also hesitant to crack it open because I didn't want it to be over. Isn't that crazy? I can't believe I'm admitting this on air, but so who is Letter to My Daughter to and why did you write it?
Well, first off, I know you've done your homework, so you know I've given birth to no daughter.
Right.
And I have the greatest thing that ever happened to me is the birth of my son. However, as good as he is, and he's the best, he's not a daughter. and so it's been my good fortune to find a lot of young women and some older ones who allowed me to mother them. And they are black young women and older, white young women and older, some Asians and some Spanish-speaking. Some gay, some straight. I've just found a lot of young women who think I know a thing or two and that I can speak for them. It's a wonderful gift. So as soon as I approached my 80th birthday, I started thinking about this letter to my daughter. If I could write a letter or a series of letters about various things which have happened to me and the lessons I've learned from those events. In the book, I try not to say what lessons I've learned, but I do say what things have happened, certain events have occurred. I have not said what I learned because I know that women are resourceful. Individual, distinct. And so what I learned from one thing, you will learn something else from the same thing. And what you learn today may be different from what you learned reading the same thing in 2010.
Isn't that the truth? It's all about kind of where you are, you know, in your own journey at that moment when you're taking this in.
Yes, exactly. So I enjoyed writing it. I had started about 20 years ago writing some suggestions and some ideas to Oprah. Just when I think about certain things, I'd make a note. And then when I was writing on poetry or composing a little piece of music or something, I'd make a note and I have a big box called WIP, Work in Progress. Some whole sheets with just about four words on them, and some two or three pages densely printed. I pulled them out last year and started looking, and I thought, you know, there are essays in some of these little ideas. So I thought, let me write them. And then as I wrote them, I realized it's this is the letter to my daughter.
You know, towards the end of Letter to My Daughter, you tell a story of a meeting you attended with a Mr. Wilkerson who made you repeat the words, God loves me, several times. And you go on to say, after about the seventh repetition, I became nervous and thought there might be a little truth in the statement. There was a possibility that God really did love me, Maya Angelou. I suddenly began to cry at the gravity and grandeur of it all. I knew that if God loved me, I could do wonderful things. I could try great things, learn anything, achieve anything. That knowledge humbles me today, melts my bones, closes my ears, and makes my teeth rock loosely in my gums, and it also liberates me.
Yes.
Can you, what role has faith played in your life?
That's such a wonderful question. Only because I've been just using it about a half hour ago, looking at faith and knowing that I don't have faith all the time. I mean, there may be those people who never question. But, you know, I'm a human being. God made me. So I have a lot of questions. And sometimes I wonder, is there a God? And then as soon that makes me so nervous. I run straight to God. And I say, you better be careful. I almost didn't believe in you for a minute there.
You know,
and I'm reminded of the apostles and the various prophets who say, I believe, Father, forgive my disbelief.
You know, I'm so glad, though, that you're so honest about it. Do you know how comforting it is to hear that? Because I think it's something all of us wrestle with, but very few people want to admit.
I know, and I think that just makes us more human. It just shows that we are more alike than we are unalike. I mean, I'm trying to be a Christian. I'm working at it. And I'm always amazed when people walk up to me and offer me their hands and say, I'm a Christian. I think, already? Already got it? Wow! I dig it. It's like trying to be a Jew or a Muslim, a Buddhist, a Shintoist, a Confucianist. It's not something you achieve and then you sit back and, you know, cross his feet and say, I really got it now. I don't have to do any more. I think it's a process. There's a song which is, and they'll know we are Christians by our love. Mm-hmm. They'll know whatever I am, that I'm it by the way I comport myself, how I treat you, my courtesy with you. My idea that I'm civil, and civil has something really to do with civil rights. I think everybody deserves civility.
You know, I want to say that, as you know, where I really got to know you better was on your radio show, Oprah and Friends, because everything you're talking about right now, you extend. You're the most gracious person that I've ever listened to, and it's been a lesson for me. But you're, you know, just an example that you're really walking the talk, and I've really appreciated listening to you on that program.
Well, I thank you. You interest me, too. Now, that I know your second, last name are two names.
Right.
Is that Flaherty?
So it's Slattery, which is Irish. So
yes.
I've got some Irish blood.
And Moscow, which is Russian, too.
Which is actually German. So my husband's German. So, yeah, it's an interesting combination with lots of beer involved, you know.
And Kathleen is very Irish. So
very Irish.
That.
Right, right. So I want to ask, this is one thing that so interests me about you. I want to ask about your writing process, because what I've read about it, it seems to play a big outcome in the honesty of your writing. Can you tell us a little bit more about your ritual?
Well, I keep a room in a hotel in my town. And when I'm working, and I rent it by the month, nobody has the right to enter the room once I really take it. I have all the photographs and art pieces or whatever they're called taken off the wall and taken out. The only thing in the room is a bed, a table, and a chair. And I put in it a Bible, Roger's Thesaurus, a dictionary, some playing cards, and a good bottle of sherry. A bottle of good sherry.
I love that.
And I go to my room about 5:30 or 6 in the morning. And I try to convince myself, enchant myself, away from the known, so I can suspend myself from belief. And then I try to immerse myself into the time I'm writing about, so I am fully there. And then I can smell the aroma of that particular time. I mean, it's really enchantment and magic and a lot of prayerful sort of dancing. And finally, after a half hour, maybe an hour, the language comes and sits in my hand. I write everything, and I have yellow pads and pen, and I work, and I try to work until about midday, and then I go home and take a shower, because writing is hard work, and although I wouldn't have had a shower in the morning, I need another when I get home, and then I try to pretend that I'm normal, and I go to the and they go to the supermarket. Or my housekeeper and I would make some wonderful dishes for dinner. And so I try to operate in the familiar. I say, how do you do? And that. And I wear clothes that button up or zip up or something. Put shoes on. But the truth is, I'm not fit company for man or beast. I really am not. I'm still in that room and listening to that language, the language of English. So beautiful.
Oh, there's so many places I want to go with this. I mean, because you're renowned for very honest writing and, you know, sharing pieces of yourself that most can't or won't do. Do you ever wrestle with whether to share or admit something? Because I've been so... you've swept me off my feet sometimes with your honesty and how far you're willing to go.
But I know this. I know that human beings are more alike than we are unalike. And if you don't admit it, and I do, it doesn't mean you don't understand what I'm talking about. You just don't want to admit it. That's all.
Right.
So I do. I know that there is nothing human that can be alien to me. I know that. And the statement was made by Terence. Homo sum, humani nihil me alienum puto. I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me. But now, I know that. So if I write about something that is unpleasant, that doesn't keep the accolades of support and laudatory words on my behalf. But whatever it is, there are other human beings who have done the same thing, or wanted to, or will do. So if I use it, I'm using it to say, this happened to me. I am a human being. And this is how I responded to it. And so, even those who can't admit that it has happened to them, in the privacy of their boudoirs or their studies, they have to say, oh God, it happened to me just like that.
It's so true. There are moments when I'd be reading your sentences that I would have to glance away from the page because you nailed it. You hit something that I wasn't expecting and had buried so deep. But we have to take a very quick break, but we'll be right back with Maya Angelou.
Don't look so surprised to see me. You never wanted much. It's so fun and nice to be here. Oh, how you do and such. I'm better now since I hit the ground. I was spinning.
The second half of the show is brought to you today by Fry Vineyards, America's oldest organic winery. Visit them at frywine.com. Welcome back. This is Kathleen Slattery Moscow, and I'm continuing my conversation with Maya Angelou. And we've been talking about Maya's spellbinding life and her monumental body of work, including her most recent book, Letter to My Daughter. Maya, I know you've lived this long and glorious life, but I just, when you're reading through your body of work, it's so hard to fathom how you turned out, you know, the quantity and the quality and the breadth of work that you have. I mean, you know, between the writing and the performing and the teaching. I mean, did you ever imagine that you would do all these things?
Well, not originally. No, I thought I was going to be a very successful real estate broker. And I was going to have alligator shoes and a matching alligator purse. And then I was going to have suede gloves. And they would come just to the wrist where there'd be a nice little pearl button. Oh, I knew I was going to dress. I wanted a Chanel takeoff. I didn't expect that I'd really want to, you know, even afford to buy a Chanel. But I knew a lot of seamstresses who could make me a Chanel-looking suit.
Well, it's the imagination in those details that make you such a fabulous writer. I'd like to ask, okay, what would you like to say to that little girl in Stamps, Arkansas?
Continue. I'd like to say that to you as well. Continue. Continue to live your life with as much courtesy, as much elan, as much fervor and civility as possible. And realize that civility is one of the civil rights that we should be able to share with each other, to speak to each other with respect and gentleness and courtesy. Yes, continue. Continue to realize that there's nobody higher than you. There can be nobody more human than you. And nobody's beneath you. Know that. There's nobody, no human being less human than you. So there's no reason for you to have your nose up in the air. Just be an honest, sincere human being trying to be the best you can in competition with no other person.
Amen. You have this beautiful show on Oprah and Friends, and it was there, as I mentioned earlier, that I came to know you and wanted to know so much more. Can you briefly touch on your friendship with Oprah? I know you mentioned it before briefly, but I know that many times she's credited you as her mentor.
Oh, she's a wonderful, wonderful spirit, wonderful brain. And she's courageous. I love her and I admire her. I'm very careful about what I say to her because I know that she's going to listen to it and pull it apart and use what she can of it. And if she can't use any of it, she just puts it aside. I don't know. Later on, she goes back to examine. But she's wise beyond her years. And that makes it easy to talk to her. And I have a lot of daughters, but she's one of those and one of the few who gave herself to me as a daughter. And I have the Black Rose, my brother's first child, who is also a daughter. And a woman in Ghana. Those are the three. I thought at one time, if I could have daughters, those would be the three principal daughters. And then Jessica Mitford, who was a sister friend of mine, she died. And it's still breaking my heart. And she has a daughter. And she gave her daughter to me. So it just so happens that I have a few that just cling. They sit on my lap and on my shoulder, and whether they know it or not. And the composer and singer, Valerie Simpson, she's one that just sits in the crack of my arm. So there they are.
Maya, I want to thank you so much for your time today and your warmth and your candor. I'll never forget this.
Thank you, Kathleen. God bless your heart and the hearts of your listeners, your audience.
That was the great Maya Angelou, and you can find out more about Maya and her latest book, Letter to My Daughter, at mayaangelou.com or at our site, thekathleenshow.com. And if you haven't already read it, I also highly encourage you to read Maya's first masterpiece, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. Don't touch that dial, because we'll be right back.
Perhaps you've heard about Nobel Peace Prize winner Professor Muhammad Yunus and the power of micro-lending. The documentary Small Change, World of Difference follows his incredible work, showing how he went from helping 42 people to 7.5 million women. PassionandGrit.com.
This is Kathleen, and our show is brought to you today by Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin, where you belong. Welcome back to the studio. I'm Kathleen Slattery Moskow, and this is the program where we push back and live a brilliant second act. It's about being more deliberate and conscious and intentional about the way we live each day. And along those lines, about a month or so ago, you might recall that I interviewed a gal named Tia Meir with the Simple Living Institute about the lifestyle that she and her husband have chosen to live. And I had first stumbled across Tia in O Magazine, but I thought it would be interesting to follow up with someone who has taken a slightly different path to simplicity, someone who walked away from a life of luxury and a several thousand square foot home to several hundred feet. Kristen Martini made a complete shift in her life. Kristen was featured in that same Oprah Magazine article as well as on The Oprah Show, and I'm thrilled to have her on the program because she has been brave enough to live her life in a way that most of us either never consider or only dream of. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kathleen. It's great to be here.
Oh, I'm so inspired by your story, what I've read in the article, but also I've been reading your blog, and it's just such a cool story. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your journey and how and why you went from living a life, you know, of luxury and country clubs to a very simple life.
Sure. Well, first, I grew up in the country in upstate New York and grew up on a lake and on a mountain gardening, led a very simple, peaceful outdoor life. And when I moved to Florida, I started out in a little cottage in the woods and I was very happy and at peace. I had a nice garden and it was very basic. And then I got married and my husband was a successful businessman and I got away from that lifestyle and we had a big house and shopping and memberships at country clubs, and I got caught up in the consumer society, and I got caught up in wanting more and more. And after a time, it became very apparent to me that I wasn't living my true life, that I was not happy with where I was. And I stayed for a while because we had children, but when it came to the point that it was making me physically ill, and I knew that it was time to get out. And so I did.
And what? Tell us about that process. So you went from this large home and all these material things and the clothes and everything that comes with it to what is your life like now? What does it look like now?
Well, my life now, when I left the marriage, I left the house, and I left most of my belongings at the house. And now I'm in an 800-square-foot house in the woods with my children, and we share a bedroom. We did just get a bed in our second bedroom, but we're still sharing the room because we enjoy the time together. We don't have a television. We read. We walk in the woods. We garden together. We play outside.
How was the adjustment period for you? I mean, because I think a lot of us think, oh, it'd be great to live the simple life, but I think a lot of us would struggle with going from where we're at to that kind of lifestyle. How was that for you?
It was an adjustment, but honestly, when I moved into the woods, I left my things, I brought food, and I brought bedding, and that was pretty much it. And I had this epiphany one day sitting there in the woods looking around and thought, I'm so content, I'm so at peace, and I don't have my things here. And it just clicked for me.
Was it hard to walk away from some of your, you know, your favorite things, maybe some favorite clothing or from, you know, some favorite pieces of furniture? And how did you handle that?
It was a process, and I think I started off getting rid of the least favorite things first.
Those old maternity clothes that just don't fit anymore.
Right, right.
Those are easy to get rid of.
And then it was realizing, well, I'm living this different life now. I don't need 10 black dresses. I don't even need one little black dress
anymore.
Well,
you can't fit them in. You don't have a closet to put them
right.
in.
Right. And honestly, I'm still going through it. I'm getting ready to sell the rest of my stuff, and these are going to be my most favorite things, the last things that I held on to, but I'm ready to let go now.
What's that moment like of letting go? Is it freeing, or is there a sadness at that point?
Leading up to it in the beginning, there was sort of a sadness, but now that I've done it so many times, I know just how freeing it really is. So honestly, I'm looking forward to getting rid of this, the rest of that stuff, and being done with it.
All right, you're listening to The Kathleen Show, and we're taking a time out for our sponsors, but I'll be right back with Kristen Martini. And during the break, check out her beautifully written blog at simplymartini.com. We'll be right back. This is Kathleen, and on behalf of my entire production team, I'd like to extend my gratitude to the American Library Association for choosing our documentary, Money Talks, Profits Before Patient Safety, as one of the top 15 films of 2008. We made the film in an effort to show consumers what happens behind the scenes of the pharmaceutical industry and the tactics the companies use to get each of us taking more prescription medications. Our goal was to get the public asking better questions about the pills they put in their bodies. Money Talks is available on DVD at moneytalksthemovie.com. Welcome back. You're listening to The Kathleen Show, and my guest is Kristen Martini, who walked away from a life of luxury and country club memberships and moved into a small cabin in the woods to live a simpler but more fulfilling life. Kristen, does the urge to shop ever take over? I mean, and what do you do during those times?
Honestly, it really doesn't anymore. In the beginning, it would, and then I would just, make the choice. Do I want to spend money on the store, or do I want to save my money so that I can be there for my children, so that I don't have to work if I don't feel like working? So it's making conscious choices. And it was a little bit of a withdrawal period, maybe, but I don't feel the urge to shop anymore.
And what do you think you were using shopping for before? I mean, read a little bit about what you had to say. And again, I just found it so profound just about, I think you mentioned something about it being a distraction from the unhappiness.
It was definitely a distraction from the unhappiness, and it was trying to fill something, and it was not really sure what to do with my time, you know, because I wasn't living the life that I wanted to live. So it was filling different areas.
What does money mean to you?
Money is necessary in this society, but coming from having had more of it to having had less of it, money is not happiness, but it can help you have freedom, and it's making the choices.
I read a comment how you wanted a nicer couch for your little cottage, but you made a comment like you saw one that was maybe $200, but you're like, no, I mean, that's my life I'm trading for that couch. I love that thought process. I mean, can you walk us through that a little bit?
Sure. Well, it's realizing how much money you make, how much each hour of your time is worth at your job, and then making the decision of whether you want to, say for me, do I want to give up 20 hours of my life for a nicer couch? And I really don't.
Right, right. I love how you talked about, too, like the importance to you now, especially of saving and having that security there. So if and when your job does end, you don't have the stress that so many right now, especially that so many millions of Americans are facing with this current economy. And there, boy, you can't put a price tag on that, right?
Right, right. I can sleep better at night knowing that we're going to be okay.
How did your kids adjust to all of this? Because I'm sure my kids would have a few choice words.
Well, I think in the beginning, a lot of it was the divorce. You know,
right.
So many of us go through that. So that was the transition. But they were happy. I mean, they loved playing outside. The sharing the room, the not having as much space, that was an adjustment. But I'm happier. And, you know, if their mother's happier, the children are going to be happier. And so that's been a big improvement. And they're finding things to do. I mean, we can spend the whole weekend outside and my children play with logs and climb trees and help me in the garden. And they're very happy doing that.
And they're not plugged in. They're not plugged into the, you know, all the Nintendos and all of the, you know, just the hi-fi stuff that so many kids are just so checked out doing these days.
I like to say that my children are actively engaged in their childhood.
Ooh, I like that. What would you say, what would you like to say to anyone listening who might be feeling stuck or trapped in their existing life?
That there is hope. Take your time, gather your thoughts, know what it is you really want to do, what life you really want to live, and start working towards it because you can do it. And getting free is so empowering, and the joy and the peace and the contentment is so worth it.
What did it take for you to, when you finally made the decision to go? I mean, it sounds like this was brewing for a while, but what was that final trigger?
It was brewing for years, and I would say the final trigger was seeing other people that were living like this and knowing that it was a valid option and it was a valid lifestyle choice and just jumping off and doing it.
I love that. I love the jumping off part. So how did it feel? Were you surprised when Oprah came a-calling?
I was.
<It's> just like...
Honestly, when I read the article, that was the first time that I had heard about this simple living or voluntary simplicity. For me, it was just these choices I had made, and it was just this life I was living. And when I read the article for the first time, when it came out in the magazine, I thought, oh... So there's a name for this.
and there's
great.
There's other people doing it, and wow.
I can read books about it.
Oh, so what's the very best thing about your new life?
That it's real, that it's genuine, that I'm not pretending to be somebody I'm not. I just am.
Tell us what people can find at your blog. And the blog, by the way, is simplymartini.com. And I'm telling you guys, it is beautifully written. But what are you trying to accomplish with the blog?
I want to share my experience. I want, just like I had friends that showed me that this was a valid option, I want to share with other people that you can do this and that you can find joy in living in life and not the things and not the stuff. It's in the being and it's in all of us, and it's in peeling away instead of adding on.
Did you ever, I mean, do you have a writing background? Because, again, I just find it a really well-written blog. I find your pieces very enjoyable.
Thank you so much. I love to write, and I have journaled for years, and I've journaled my experience through this, and so I'm creating it, and I'm learning to look at it as an art, and so I am writing more. Thank you.
Kristen, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Kathleen. I really appreciate it. I've enjoyed it.
That was Kristen Martini, and you can find out more about her at simplymartini.com or link to her through our site, thekathleenshow.com. Stay right where you are, because next up, I have a darned smart and provocative pick of the week. We'll be right back. Hello, this is Kathleen, and we're looking to partner with a few great and like-minded sponsors. So if you like what you're hearing on the show and feel that our values are a match, please contact us through our website at thekathleenshow.com. This is Kathleen, and our show is brought to you today by Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin, where you belong. Welcome back. You're listening to The Kathleen Show, and it's time for Pick of the Week. I'm going broad today, and instead of a specific work of art or entertainment, I'm choosing an entire publication because each month this particular publication delivers smart and provocative examples of great writing. My Pick of the Week is The New Yorker. And one of the reasons I wanted to pick a publication is because I'm sick to death of the dumbed-down, regurgitated headlines and articles featured on and in so many women's magazines. Yeah, every now and then I'm interested in that hot new shade of lipstick or the top 10 ways to shrink my butt, but month after month of this crap is insulting. I mean, come on, do they forget that we have a brain? You know, I want to read great writing about timely, topical, and even sometimes philosophical issues that make me think and maybe even laugh or cry a bit. Writing that also goes well beyond the dry reporting in many of the more newsy publications. Because that is the kind of writing that moves people. That is the kind of writing that makes a difference. If you're not reading The New Yorker, head down to your local bookstore to check it out. And it's also available online. And we'll have the links and a couple of my favorite recent articles at our website, thekathleenshow.com. And that, my friends, is a wrap for this hour of the show. But for many of you, I'll be right back with hour two.